180. Get them at their new time from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. Now it's time for Blaine and Mickey, powered by the Tennessee Lottery on 104.5 The Zone.
Friday edition of Blaine and Mickey is on your radio or whatever you were listening on today, regardless of what you're listening on. We appreciate you listening with us. Man, we're going to talk a lot of football today. Can't wait to mix things up. Let's just start with this, Blaine. Ryan Clark has Titans fans up in arms. Former Steelers DB.
What did RC do? What did he say or do?
And I'll say this. RC is good on the TV. He was a good player, and he is good on the TV. But JT, I know you got this audio. JT is working on it. We'll have it coming up later on. But he basically said, he used phrases like late play bravery and fake bravery, talking about Derrick Henry, and said he got asked basically by Stephen A. Smith, this guy runs straight up. Why do people keep challenging him up top? Why don't people go lower? That was the question that started it all. And so he basically said, hey, man, he's got late play bravery, meaning he'll push the, and they brought up Earl Thomas, and he goes, Earl Thomas is not big. You can push Earl Thomas, you know, if you're that size. And he said, essentially, if I'm in that game on Sunday, I'm going to get in a track stance. If I know a run's coming, and I'm either going to hit Derrick Henry or I'm going to hit the goalpost on the other end, whatever stops me. And said his DBs have got to send a message in that game that Derrick Henry is not going to push them around.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and to add to what he was actually saying, he was saying that Derrick Henry doesn't hit the hole hard, and that when he gets in the open field, he's a beast master, if you want to call it that, or whatever term he called it. But when you're going against the big boys up front, then you kind of play kind of small. I think that's what he was alluding to. He used all these adjectives to make it real glossy and real fancy for TV, which he does a superb job. I like a lot of the things and agree with a lot of the things that he talks about. And this is one of the issues, actually, that I partly agree with. I do. Absolutely, I do. I think Derrick Henry is everything he's saying, except when he started six games ago last year and then kind of went on a run. He doesn't hit the hole hard as Jeremy McNichols, a guy that's third string. That's why I like that quickness. But that's not his style. His style is, once I hit the hole, then I make you pay.
Right.
Now, I think he's improved on that. No different than he's improved on his pass catching and his running ability to weave in and out of cuts for a big, long striding guy with sprinter speed. I think his mentality has changed. And I think that is really, which no one ever has described, what Eddie George has gave him a conversation about. But I think it was about that. You got to hit the hole and pound people early, and you may only get 2 yards, 3 yards. You may even lose yards. So I think he's talking about Derrick Henry as a whole, but as of last year and this year, I think Derrick Henry has learned that he can hit it up in that hole, at least the way he does, as fast as he can, and he's still a nightmare to deal with. So I think he's partly right, but I think gradually Derrick Henry, the king, is showing that he's more than that, and he can do more than that and hit the hole just as hard as anybody else.
It was interesting because the Titans sort of did their own behind-the-scenes video at the start of last season, and it was igniting the flame or something like that to do with the fireball and the helmet. And Tony Dews, the running backs coach, part of the audio in that show was Tony Dews pulling Derrick Henry aside, and he said, hey, big fella, you're the biggest guy out there. I mean, all you have to do is run hard. You're the biggest guy. The biggest guy can move the pile. The biggest guy can knock people out of his way, and I'm paraphrasing, but Tony Dews was telling him at the beginning of the year, hey, man, you use your size all the time. You're the biggest guy out there. You go at people. So, and that actually may have been, gosh, that may go back to actually not the beginning of last year, beginning of year before, whenever Tony Dews started. But Tony Dews was telling
when him, it's not a hole, you do exactly what you're talking about. Right.
Right.
And I still think there's parts of Derrick Henry's game. There's one part that I at least notice that still needs to be worked on. And that is He's always trying to bounce the play like he's in college and high school. And when I say bounce the play, I mean he's trying to dip inside and dip out. And that's what he really wants to do. Mostly smaller 5'11 type guys my size, backs want to do those things because of their quickness and speed, which Derrick Henry has. But with disciplined defenses who have gap integrity, that means they stay in their gaps. And if you have outside contain, you don't fold back thinking you're going to make the play when he comes through, or you don't try to hit him across the bow. You stay outside. And naturally, you will then get Henry. And there was times in the last game that he actually tried to do that, and the Bills played it correctly. And then there was times they didn't, and somebody got a little nosy and tried to do not their job and do more than their job when it was too soon. So, so if I'm watching Derrick Henry, I'm going to say we're going to fill gaps, have outside contain integrity, and play your gap, and let's see what happens. And we'll see if he gets to our second and third level and try to abuse the smaller guys that he can run through with a head of steam. Because, yeah, I don't care who you are, Eddie George or any big back. You don't even have to be big. Yeah, you're going to have an advantage if they're just standing there and then all of a sudden they only get two or three steps to run up there and tackle you. That's why you always see the DBs on the back. That's why, to me, it's about a lasso. You right. Figure out angles and understand angles, and that's how you tackle. So you don't want to take on a head of steam, and that's going to hurt. You're going to have to make a business decision, and that business decision is going to be like, I'm going to run in here full steam like Ryan Clark, RC, is talking about, and we're going to play this game tip for tat, and I'm not going to cave. So either that, or you're going to say, nah, I'm going to just dive low and see what happens and close my eyes and go for the best. Yeah.
Well, the other thing you've talked about, too, with – talking about especially your history with cornerbacks, is telling those guys, look, get in front of him, make him go sideways for a second, and that will give me time to get
there.
That's
all I need.
Right. Don't let him run. Just don't let him run right past you. Alter his path.
And
that'll give me time.
Yeah, no doubt about it. That's my whole philosophy. And I'm not asking them to do – it's not like them trying to say, hey, man, why don't you come out here and guard Plaxico Burress man-to-man? Well, I don't want you up here, tackling Jerome Bettis, because guess why? I really feel that for him. Because
– right.
I don't want you out the game. I want you in game. So guess what? I want you to tie his shoestrings. All you got to do is make him stutter for me, and because I'm a coming. And when I get there, I'm going to get there with a bad attitude. So, and I think that's what Ryan Clark's talking about. I mean, I think it's kind of, timing's everything. And he had a great game, and everybody's looking at it like, hey, man. But everybody has a weakness to their game. Ryan Clark, myself, even the King, even Tannehill. So these are the things he's talking about. And yeah, you brought it up. Make him run sideways. He's not the same guy. He wasn't. Right. Guess what? Josh Norman was running sideways, and that was why he was able to lift him like that.
Right.
Yeah. See? I mean, so everybody's going to get got. Right. Just when you got that big mouth like Josh Norman, they're gonna put it on you. So
we'll see how he does against the defense.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see how well he does against this defense, though, to be honest. And if he creases them for more than 100, hey, man, I will say there's not too many guys that's going to be able to stop Henry. You may stop him for a little while, but throughout a whole game, if he runs like that and continues to pound, pound, pound till he breaks one, then he will be something special that we'll be talking about 10 years down the road from here. And potentially
going
to the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. If you make it to the Hall of Fame, if you make it to the National Football League, you are an unbelievable competitor to get to that point. You have to be somebody who has this unbelievable ability to compete. But as a competitor, if you're Derrick Henry, you got that Steelers defense coming for you. Maybe it was a running back or somebody that gave you trouble that came after you. How much did you love those opportunities like that where you knew you were going to compete at the highest level of the highest level?
Oh, well, I mean, that was every week, though, in my mind.
Yeah.
I mean, that was every game. I mean, every player. If you don't look at it that way, you'll get embarrassed because all those guys are really good. Now, here's the difference between the Hall of Fame player. The Hall of Fame player is the guy that has all the talent, he has all the wisdom, and he has the wherewithal and the competitive nature that is just at another level. And then that's when you get a Hall of Fame player. There's a whole bunch of attributes you got to have to have those. I was a heck of a competitor, but I didn't have all the size. I didn't have all the speed, had the mind, But see, you're not going to be there. That doesn't mean I couldn't compete and say, hey, man, when I go against T.O., Shannon Sharpe, all those guys, hey, I'm gonna shut them down. Oh, yeah, I had that mentality. And half the time I did. So I could say, hey, I played against some of the best and held my own. Mm-hmm. So eventually you got to get to say, well, I'm going to play my best and he ain't going to be able to hold my own. He ain't going to be able to. He's going to find out that, hey, man, I'm a bad man. And you ain't got to talk about it. In the NFL, it's all about be about it.
Yeah. Man, well, it's going to be about it on Sunday. I can't wait. Going to hear it all on the zone, starting with Dr. Smooth, Kevin Dyson, and Blaine and me at 10 a.m., and we'll just keep you rolling all day long. And Dory Jackson, one other note, practice today for the third straight day. They got to make a decision on him tomorrow, but he did practice again today. A.J. Brown was back too, and a Big Panda practiced. Although Vrabel was asked about him, he goes, look, man, I don't know anything about anybody from one Friday practice. But A.J. Brown back today, as well as the Dory Jackson continued practice. Both very good things.
Yeah, I think you called this one, man. I was still nervous and on the fence with a Dory. I didn't know if he was going. I think he's got a chance to play. What do you think? You've been calling that you think he will. I think you may get it right.
I just think they need him so bad. I mean, I just think they
you can't
him.
Play somebody at a need, Mickey. You got to play him if they're healthy. If not, you're going to hurt the long term. Guess what? We need the Panda. So why don't you put that same criteria? Okay, he was sick. He was doing Zoom calls.
The other thing is this. It was a three-week stint on the injured reserve. 3 weeks is the minimum you got to spend. And we're all the way out to week six here, including the bye. So he has had some extra time to get himself ready. If this was the third week and he came back, then I'd say I'm a little more nervous. But I'm not. Nobody's told me anything. I don't know. But I just think time has probably given him a chance to get himself ready. But we shall see. We'll all find out tomorrow together. Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Time to talk some Vols. Trey Wallace, stick and stay. We'll get the latest from Knoxville next.
This is your home.
Let's head to Knoxville. Let's get the latest from Big Orange Country. Trey Wallace joins us now, Fox Sports, Knoxville, and the optional. I was asking you this. We were talking a little bit during the break. I mean, it's the third Saturday in October, just played on the fourth Saturday of October. We'll have to give COVID another pass here. But it's Alabama week, and I was asking you, what's the vibe? And it doesn't sound like the vibe is great, Trey.
No, guys, good to join you, first off. But it's just, man, it's one of those things where I've taken calls all week where guys are just folks are unsteady about the quarterback situation, unsteady about Jeremy Pruitt. I think we'd be in a lot different situation if Tennessee would have came out against Kentucky and actually performed the way that we thought that they should have and won that football game. But now you're sitting here, you get beat 34-7 against Kentucky, and the Tide's coming to town after beating up on Georgia. It's just, there's not a lot of hope. I haven't heard anybody this week that thinks Tennessee's going to win. I haven't heard anybody this week that thinks Tennessee's going to keep it within 21 points. It's a weird vibe here in town right now, the day before such a big-time matchup. And, yeah, a lot of that has to do with COVID. You know, there's not a lot of people in town, but also just the vibe of this area. It's been pretty bleak this week, guys.
So you mentioned the quarterback topic getting you a lot of phone calls. What do you think happens? What's the right thing that happens? Heck, Nick Saban thinks Brian Maurer's going to play.
Yeah, that to me, that was like, okay, what plant did you have at practice this week? Because I had heard earlier in the week that Maurer was running a little bit up there at the top and also splitting time with JG, and then Bailey was too. But then, you know, yesterday, Maurer's running scout team with the 7-on-7. And it's just, I don't know which way they go with this thing. My gut tells me that they're going to roll JG out there to start the game tomorrow. And then if it comes down to it, you're either going to play Bailey or Maurer. I think we have seen the last of JT Shrout at Tennessee. I don't agree with that, but after talking with some folks, it just seems like this coaching staff has lost all faith in JT Shrout, which I don't know really how you could do with just one pass in a football game, but that seems to be the take here in town.
With Trey Wallace, Fox Sports Knoxville, the read optional, and more.
Well, Trey, I guess I feel like how you're talking, like, do they even have a shot? I mean, they played them surprisingly close last year until the debacle of JG. I mean, and now they're at home. Do you see them having a way? Give us the recipe of them having a way to keep this game close.
Look, I think Tennessee has the talent to play Alabama close. I mean, that, you know, I've talked about it during the week. I think when you look at Tennessee defense, I think the one problem the Tennessee defense is going to have, and it's a big problem, is lining up on the defensive line against Alabama. They have guys with high motors. They've got a couple big guys in Aubrey Solomon, Darrell Middleton, but they just don't have that monster on the D-line. I think at the linebacker spot, you're going to have Jeremy Banks has, you know, been kind of off and on dealing with a high ankle sprain this week. I don't know how much he's going to be able to go tomorrow, if any. They moved Morvin Joseph over to inside linebacker this week. So who plays alongside Henry Toa is going to be Crouch, but also, you know, Crouch ain't going to be able to play the whole game. So you just have to wonder how they're going to switch them out in that standpoint. But look, I think this Tennessee team has enough talent on the offensive line. I think they have enough talent at running back. If they come out and play a game kind of like what Kentucky did, just kind of run the football when you have to, pass the football around, don't make things complicated, I think that gives Tennessee an opportunity. I personally don't think Tennessee goes out and gets blown out tomorrow. I think Tennessee can keep this thing around 17 points, something along those lines. That first line came out, I think, in the fourth quarter, the third and the fourth quarter, maybe Alabama starts to separate themselves. But Tennessee does have enough talent. And it's just, I think the fan base up here, honestly, is just beat up. I think you come off a game like that where you have a second half performance against Georgia, and then you come out and you just play bad football against Kentucky. I just think fans, they don't know what to think. They're like, how did we get to this point? We're supposed to have, you know, a top three offensive line in the country. We're supposed to be running the football on everybody. We're supposed to be passing the ball down the field to Palmer or Ramel Keaton, or getting Valus Jones or these young guys like Malachi Wyman and Jalen Hyatt involved. And you just haven't seen that. And I think offensively, that kind of ties back to what Jim Chaney's doing, which I thought his play calling in the last 2 weeks has been pretty vanilla.
Yeah, completely agree with that. We're on with Trey Wallace with Fox Sports. I guess I want to ask you about the offensive line. And I know they had some injuries, and I know Cade Mays has kind of moved around a little bit. But there's an analogy that most offensive line coaches live by, and is not always the best five talented players are the best as a group, but the best that works together as a group is the best. Do you think that Tennessee, which philosophy do they live behind?
That's a really good question, because you saw last week, Cade Mays was playing right guard most of the game. Now, look, they did bring in Spraggins at some parts. When Tennessee went on that long scoring drive for the touchdown where they ran the football every play, Spraggins was in the game. But then they come back out the next series, and it's a completely different offensive line besides your anchors like Brandon Kennedy and Trey Smith. I think what you could see this week, if Wanye can't go, I think you would switch over Cade Mays, move him to left tackle, and then potentially put Spraggins right there at right guard, and then Darnell Wright at right tackle. But I look at guys, you know, Jerome Carvin still dealing with an injury. He's been battling turf toe. You look at K'Ron Calvert, a player who – has SEC experience. I mean, he's played in this league before. He's gone up against this Alabama team. He's been kind of down the depth chart, but I think you got to find something. But here's my biggest thing when it comes to Tennessee's offensive line is, and I think I've said this before, you can't keep rolling out 7 to 8 guys. Yep. You've got to find some consistency. And I go back to that drive where they ran the ball 12 out of 13 times on that scoring drive against Kentucky. But then they come out and they want to switch it up the next series. I don't get it. I'm not going to act like I understand it. Jerome Carvin's not playing right now, so it's not like they're having to switch in or switch out. It's very suspect to me about how they're trying to play this, especially with Jim Chaney's play calling, because in my opinion, he hasn't helped the offense out any.
Right.
And Garantano is a whole different subject.
Well, if they're watching film, I think, you know, Coach Pruitt on the defensive side, I could see the Alabama's offense and just steal like half of their plays and run the same plays.
I agree.
There's a vertical throwing game.
I agree with you. I think Tennessee's biggest thing that they can do this week is, Blaine, and maybe you'll agree with me on this, I think Tennessee should drop 8 or drop 7. Run some of that clout defense. Make Mac Jones beat you on the dump downs. Like, yep. We know Najee Harris is going to be able to run the football. They got the best offensive line in the SEC. But put Mac Jones into some situations, bring some pressure off the corners, make him have to dump down 5-6 yards, and Tennessee just prevent right there, because you can't get beat. Waddell's going to get behind you, I promise, on one or two plays. And if they can try to control that part, and don't give up those darn slants, guys. Don't give up those 10-yard slants that turn into 30-yard gains. And if Tennessee can do that, then I think that they can hang around with Bama for a little bit. But the minute they let somebody get behind them at the inside linebacker spot, somebody right in that little sweet spot, that's what's going to turn Tennessee's game sideways.
No doubt about it. We're on with Trey Wallace of Fox Sports in Knoxville.
Trey, you've mentioned Chaney a couple times on this phone call. I was reading one of your, I guess, fan-run radio posts, and you really kind of went in on the coaches, you know, at the development of a second quarterback, play calling. You know, at some point you say, hey, maybe it's time to really look past the players at the guys who are coaching these players.
Yeah, I was fully on. Look, I was at the beginning of the season. It's like, okay, what can Jared Garantano do to be able to, you know, continue on what he had at the end of last year? And then once we saw, you know, that it wasn't quite there for him, and it's never going to be there for him, let's just get the obvious out there. Jared Garantano is not going to be your all SEC type player. He's also not going to be your game manager anymore, because there's too many what ifs when he takes that snap and shotgun and he drops back 2 steps. I don't blame that on the player anymore. I don't blame that on Jared Garantano. I don't blame that on JT Shrout. I'm over blaming the quarterbacks for the situation. I blame the coaches now, because the coaches should know they had five and a half weeks of camp. They've had 4 weeks of practice during game weeks. They should know by now what you're getting out of your quarterback spot. So there's no sense in killing Garantano over this, because you know what you're going to get with Garantano. So you're setting yourself up for this. I blame the coaching staff. I blame Chris Winkie for not having a second quarterback at least ready to go, that somebody that you can at least trust. I get that you didn't have a spring. I completely understand that. But I will say this. You've had JT Shrout and Brian Maurer in that system for 2.5 years now. And if they can't get back there in the pocket and take a snap and throw a 5-yard out, a 10-yard post, something along those lines to at least manage the offense, then that's where you failed. Because I just don't buy into the blaming anymore, because I think that's overrated now. Because everybody can say that, oh, Jared Garantano, all he does is throw interceptions. Okay, if the fan on the 30-yard line or the fan in the upper deck knows what you're going to get out of the quarterback when you put him in the game, how in the world does the coaches not just recognize that and try to move in a different direction and see if you can get a spark out of somebody else? Because it's just not working anymore.
Trey Wallace, our guest, but, you know, Pruitt has talked about that. And he said, hey, man, we see practice. And he's practiced at the best. You know, he makes winning plays in practice.
Yeah, I mean, look, and I get it. And I hate to do this, because I hate to bring this quarterback into play, but a kid that was not a practice player and performed with you on the field was Josh Dobbs.
As soon as you said that, I knew you were going Dobbs.
Right, and I hate to use Dobbs, because he's such a different type of quarterback. He reminds me of what Caden Salter is going to bring to Tennessee with his legs. But they didn't know then, you know what I mean? And they put him in, and they find a spark out of him. My biggest thing is Brian Maurer can sling the football. JT Shrout's got the best arm on the football team. Harrison Bailey can be the future for Tennessee, but he's not ready yet. he's not ready yet. The young man, you know, has barely, he hasn't even turned 19 years old yet. He's barely been able to get any kind of practice reps beside what they force feeding him the last couple of weeks. And then you throw him in against Kentucky and you see Brian Maurer on the bench. And I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Like, why pass over Maurer, who's been in the system for so long? And then Jeremy Pruitt comes out this week and says that they're going to figure out who's healthy at quarterback. And it's like, okay, now you're throwing another wrinkle on this, the healthy part of it. I think Jared Garantano is dealing with a hand injury right now. He's been practicing through it though. He can be ready to play in the game if he needs to be. Brian Maurer's dealt with a knee and a hamstring and whatnot, but he's practiced the last 4 weeks. If he's good enough to be running your scout team against your one defense, then I would at least think he can get some reps and practice with the ones and the twos at least. I don't know. That part is kind of flabbergasted me on how we got to this point of how you look around the country and how many teams in the SEC have gone to a backup quarterback and you've seen production. Yes, it always doesn't work out. And I understand that, but at least they tried. I mean, look what Missouri got themselves into when they found themselves a quarterback that wasn't Sean Robinson. I can go on. There's other SEC schools out there that have done this. I just think the blame needs to be over with. I don't want to see a lot of boos tomorrow. If you're going to aim the boos at anybody in that stadium, aim them to Jeremy Pruitt for making the decision and not the quarterback that's just being told what to do.
Man, don't aim any boos at Trey Wallace. He's bringing the heat today. Got the fastball working on this Friday edition of Blaine and Nikki.
It's been a long week, guys.
Well, I guess I'm gonna go to something else then, Trey, just on the optics on the Brombaugh, and people are trying to say he fired him at halftime, and I don't even know if
that's gosh.
Somebody in the third, fourth quarter, but hey, I could be wrong. And now the reductions of I guess some of the athletic department, and then you fire a coach and then you get fined. I mean, just from an optics point of view, it just doesn't look right. I mean, man, how do you feel about it? How do people in Knoxville feel about it?
I feel like that contract extension for Jeremy Pruitt was announced too early. I felt like that at the time. I mean, I knew they were negotiating. You talk to people, you know that they had a contract, you know, in place. They were going to do the whole $400,000 raise immediately, but they decided, okay, let's push that back because of the pandemic. He's also got a retention bonus, but that wouldn't go into effect till next summer. I don't think it's played out good now, because now you've got ammunition. Now you got ammunition to go after the athletic director and the head coach. Like, why announce that right now? And I'm not saying Jeremy Pruitt has not deserved an extension or anything along those lines. And I guess they did it because recruiting, because there's no other team out there in the country that's coming after Jeremy Pruitt right now. And that's not a knock. That's just reality. But I just think it was bad timing. I think after the season would have been fine. What was the point? I mean, the recruiting part of it, I think they all knew that he was going to be there anyway. So I didn't quite understand that. Fans have been pretty loud about that this week, about their feelings towards, okay, we're losing so much money in the athletic department. The University of Tennessee, and I was looking at some figures yesterday, you know, $117 million. Goodness gracious, that's a lot of money. You look at the athletic department and what they're losing, which the university said that they would come out, you know, and take care of and help out with loans or whatnot. And that's fine. But I think on the surface, how much money's being lost, and then you're turning around and firing a guy that you're going to have to pay upwards of $850,000, anywhere to $1.3 million, just to go away. The optics aren't good. And financially, yeah, it might not be the smart decision. You know, Jeremy was going to let Jimmy Brombaugh go at the end of the season. I know that for a fact, but they came in there and they decided, you know what, we're going to go ahead and do this thing now. He didn't get fired on the sideline. He didn't get fired in the tunnel during halftime or after the game. He came in on Sunday. He was watching some film with the defensive unit. Jeremy Pruitt had a meeting with him, said your services are no longer needed, and that was that. He wouldn't have been in on there on Sunday in the facility if he was fired during a game on Saturday. You know how many times head coaches fire their assistant coaches during football games? Winky would have already been fired 8 times this year if that was the case. So is what it is, right?
Hey, just real quick on that same note about, you know, Brombaugh being fired on the money. How does that process work for the head coach? Does he have to run it up the chain of command before he makes that decision, or can he do that? And then let's say athletic director just has to support what he's done.
You know, that's an interesting question. I tried to get some word about that from Tennessee. Haven't really got anything in stone about that. I know that he's been unsatisfied for a few weeks now, dating back to before the Missouri game, because they just had two different type of coaches. Tracy Rocker, Brombaugh, two different type of coaches. But to get back to your point of having to, I am sure that Jeremy Pruitt gave Philip Fulmer a heads up, being like, hey, look, I want to do this. I think we need to do this for the better of the team. And I would imagine, you know, I don't know if he has to give him his, you know, the Godfather blessing of, hey, you can do it, but I'm sure that he has the latitude to do what he wants with his coaching staff. Yeah.
We're with Trey Wallace of Fox Sports in Knoxville.
Trey, before we let you go, getting some reaction to this on Twitter, Buckethead says, Trey Wallace has left me with no confidence in this coaching staff after his interview. and this has started a chain of tweets back and forth, and somebody responded and said, hey, man, did it take Trey saying that to make you lose confidence in these guys?
And that's the thing, too. Like, and I'll be real honest with you. I think Jeremy Pruitt's a really good football coach. I think he has guys on his squad Absolutely. That are good. I think Derek Hansley's a good football coach. I think I think when you look at the inside linebackers, I think Shelton Felton is coming up, and he's going to be strong. I think Niedermeyer is a recruiter, and then he's a coach. And that just is what it is. Everybody has two of those guys on the staff. Let's be real honest with each other. But I think offensively, T. Martin has done a good job with his wide receivers. Wide receivers can't do much if they're not getting the ball and touchdowns being thrown to the other team. So I kind of look at it. The only sore spot that I would say right now would be the offensive line and Will Friend. When you have that many stars up front and you're not getting as much as you need to, I think you have to take a look at that one. And then Jim Chaney. Jim Chaney's got to try something different this weekend, because if he comes out and just tries to dink and dive and, you know, run the ball a couple times, don't let your tight ends touch the football, you're not testing anybody. I don't remember one pass last week where they actually tested Kentucky down the field until the fourth quarter, when the game was out of reach and Harrison Bailey hit Weidman down the sideline. Like, you've got to have that. I don't care if Alabama is showing that or not. You've got to test them, because if you're not testing them, then they're going to do exactly what you would think they would do. They're going to load 8 in the box, and they're going to say, okay, you want to run it? Bring it on. Let's go. We're going to stop you. So I think this weekend is very big for Jim Chaney to get back on track. I think Jeremy Pruitt knows it. I think tomorrow will be a measuring stick of how far this staff can go, because Tennessee in year three, I'll leave it at this, Tennessee in year three, A, should not have lost to Kentucky, but B, they should not be still getting blown out by 35 points by the Georgias, the Alabamas, and the Floridas. So tomorrow is a big day for this Tennessee football team. They just need to come out. They need to play sound football, and they need to get sound coaching for that sideline.
No doubt.
Man, Trey Wallace bringing it today. Trey, thank you, man. Enjoy your show today, and we'll be keeping up with you on Twitter at Trey_Wallace_FoxSportsKnoxville and all the other great outlets that we see you on. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, look, we're doing our show from a bar today, so we'll see how this one goes. So y'all be good. Thank you for having me.
don't get too oiled up, Trey.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
All right, buddy.
All right, ball fans, you just heard a bunch of truth from Trey Wallace. People responding on Twitter. Phone lines open, 615-737-1045. He said, I think we've seen the last of JT Schrout. Lots of stuff about the coaching staff as well. 615-737-1045. Open lines, ball fans. What you say? It's Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Blaine and Mickey on 104.5 The Zone. Keeping the discussion going here, Tennessee. Like I said, Buckethead, who has been a longtime listener, responder to this radio station, had responded to this interview and said, Trey Wallace has left me with no confidence in this coaching staff after his interview. And I was reading some of Trey's stuff. He does radio and he writes blogs. He does all kinds of stuff. And I kind of got to reading Blaine a lot of what he was saying. And he's like, look, man, at some point, the players are going to give you the best that they have. And if you're not putting them in better situations, and I'm paraphrasing because this was a fairly long article. He said, you got to point the fingers back at the coaches. So I, you know, wanted to ask him about that, but he was very adamant today again, just that he doesn't feel like the coaches are putting players in the best situations to be successful or grooming players. You know, he talked about the offensive line and Will Friend and how that this is a group of highly rated players that continues to underperform. And you would ask Barrett Salee earlier this week when he was on with us of CBS Sports just about the contract of Jeremy Pruitt and the timing and all those things. And this is what Barrett said about that here on Blaine and Mickey earlier this week.
I have no idea why that would be a good idea, because while, you know, they want to marry themselves to Pruitt long term, that's fine. But as you're right, he wasn't going to go anywhere. The financial situation around the country is questionable at best when it comes to college athletics. And then, you know, if you're doing it for recruiting purposes, I think the recruits are smart enough to know, you know, that it's a different era and a different landscape in college football. And if you don't have Jeremy Pruitt locked up in a way where, you know, he's going to be there for your duration of your career, it doesn't matter all that much. So I can't explain it to you. I really can't. If I was an AD, I don't know how I would approach giving coaches extensions right now, because I'd love to know the behind the scenes chatter that Jimmy Sexton and some of these ADs are having, because the language just cannot stay the way it was before the pandemic hit.
Yeah,
maybe it has some opts out. I mean, you know, they can opt out, you know, and pay stops after that season if they fired him, or, you know, whatever, or if he leaves. However, me, you know, maybe that is true. You know, I have no idea, but ooh, that's a tough one there. I said that at the time just because of it was just the timing. You know, everybody getting laid off, furloughed, and then we get an extension, even though it won't really take an effect to next season. Right. I just like, what is the rush? Like, there's no, like, is he going somewhere? I mean, like, is somebody trying to get him inside him? I mean, man, so. Hey, hats off to his agent, you know, everybody involved. But and that had nothing to do with the season, because it was before the season started, you know. So I was just generally, as a businessman, that's kind of how I was thinking. But, you know, they give these extensions out to these coaches. And I think it was going to be like the, I don't remember, what is it, 2023 or something? I'm like, well, dang, well, that was, I mean, he's not leaving. I mean, so, yeah. So it was always puzzling to me. But now that'll come back to the forefront. Now that they have they had a horrendous loss to Kentucky. And I think a lot of people could take losing to Kentucky. It's just the way that they lost. And they're supposed to beat them naturally. But if you're going to get beat, let it be a close one. They stunk it up, man. And then, now a coach has to pay. And it was the D-line coach for whatever reason. And he had he complained about the D-line every week, though. You got to listen to him. So there was something there, you know, that he didn't like he was teaching him. And to me, I would have tried to smooth it out. I get it, though. You're under control. Hey, I done told you this three times, and now you're still teaching them this. I don't want to teach that. And I would have held on to the end of the year or something, man. I would have tried to, hey, man, I'm a coach of D-line. You just stand there and practice something.
Did you notice this week that Pruitt said the D-line was having its best practices?
Okay, think about this now. You know, that's like having our boss come and sit on in on us and just say, hey, I'm going to show y'all what to do on every break. And this is what y'all going to do. We better have our best practice, or guess where we at? To the bench. And our bench is like at home and never coming back out on air. So yeah, the kids are going to practice harder. Come on. Really?
D-line having its best practices.
I'm sure somebody asked him. But, I mean, they better practice better. wherever the coach goes, that day, they better practice really good. So now hopefully they play a lot better. They were playing solid considering what's all there for the talent. Maybe the second half they didn't play as well, but man, that is not where my eyes was going as far as what was the problem. It was all offense. And expectations are where is that? And I think that's why everybody's looking at the offensive line and the offense. Because you got 5 and 4-star guys over there, and they look like they're 3-stars. So, I mean, what's going on, man?
And here's the thing. Against a team like Alabama, you need that run game and that offensive line to keep the ball away from Alabama. So when the season starts, you think, hey, man, they got all those receivers. Got all these 4 and 5-star guys. Trey Mays is eligible. I mean, we're ready to roll. And
then watch it go out there and look really good, Mickey. Watch.
Yeah.
What? But you know what? They get up for the other 5-star guy on the other side of the ball.
Yeah.
Oh, man, Kentucky. Oh, man, we got these guys. Sit back and relax. Oh, we got Obama. Oh, yeah, I know that guy. They said he was all that. I'm going to show them. I'm going to raise my draft stock.
Yeah.
Watch him. I think this is going to be, and they said 21 points. I think it's going to be a closer. Not unless the quarterback whoever's the quarterback just stinks it up. But I think they'll be able to run the football a little bit enough to say, that's interesting. Why did y'all do this last week? And that's the SEC. It's hard to play the same way every week, man.
Yeah.
They came out flat, man, second half. They actually looked tough in the first half to me, but they can run the football.
2:30 Saturday on CBS. The whole world's about to see this, especially if it's raining. Everybody's going to be in the house watching this game. So those guys need to get up. Need to get up for Alabama. I heard Josh Ward say this. The last time Tennessee beat Alabama, nobody had an iPhone. It wasn't a thing yet. So literally that win predated the iPhone, my man Josh Ward.
Back in I'm guessing JT probably knows better than me. 06?
I think 07. I think 07 was like the beginning of the launch of the iPhone. So no iPhones, no Androids. Blaine's an Android guy. Ramon Foster of J-Mart and Ramon said to join us to continue this. Well, guess what? He can do both. He can talk balls. He can talk Titans and Steelers. He was a Steeler, and he's on the zone, and he will join us coming up in about 20 minutes.
It's the biggest.